I want to welcome, and the group is Mary's Advocates. Hey, Bay, how are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm good. How are you?
I am well. So, do
hey,
you?
I love Veritas Radio.
Thank you. Do you remember L.A. Law?
Vaguely, I think my dad didn't want us watching it.
Well, as I said, it was controversial at the time, and it's because all the law firm did was these divorces. And so that's what they were all famous for. I remembered another factoid from it now. One of the female lawyers at the firm was Lori Partridge. Susan Day, the actress Susan Day. She played Lori Partridge on the show. Anyways, tell us a little bit about Mary's Advocates and about how it is that you found your way. First of all, you're a 501c3, meaning that this is not for profit work. That's number one. So if you want to support Mary's Advocate from a charitable point of view, you can and should. Number two, how'd you get into it? Walk us through the history of Mary's Advocates.
Whoa. Well, I didn't know much about divorce, and I was a defendant in a no-fault divorce here in Ohio, and I became friends with a priest, and he was walking with me through the whole process, and I was stunned at all the injustices were going on in the civil forum, but I also was stunned at the reaction that came from the institutional church, so to speak, where the institutional church, at least in my area, basically paid no attention to it, and all anyone wanted to do was let you know that when you were done with your divorce, we could give you your healing by getting you your annulment. And that's how it started. And then what I learned is that there's a lot of men, usually men whose wives decide they need to get out and get their freedom. They don't love them anymore. And these men have their children taken away. They get kicked out of their own homes. They're faced with having court orders to pay lots of money, and it's all crazy. So that's how I got into it. And then I discovered the church teaching on separation and divorce, and I was so excited about it, I started publicizing it and started a nonprofit. And about 2 years ago, I started doing it full time because of some changes in my job. So I've been going month to month trying to spread the word about the church teaching and constitutional principles that can be invoked to try to save marriages, encourage an abandoner to work on their marriage, and even support those who are unjustly abandoned. There's a network of us that support each other because the culture tells us you're not married anymore. And it's a really hard walk when everyone's telling you that.
Well, they tell you you're not married anymore because the concept of adultery is it's just another verb, which is you committed adultery 17, 18 times a month. But we don't want to talk about that. I got a new wife now, or I have a new husband. Something you said, though, should already pricked up the ears of some listeners in the chat room, and that's this. You said you learned the church's teaching on this. And you got excited about it. Now, I got to tell you, and we have different ways of saying Mr. and Mrs. on this show. It's a coinage. It'd take me an hour to explain it. But it's Mitter Church, M-I-T-T-E-R. You're Mittis McFarlane or Miss McFarlane. So I have to tell you that, Miss McFarlane, when you hear church teaching, you're supposed to do the opposite, madam. You're supposed to run away in horror, shrieking, me in a basement, but you said the exact opposite. I want you to elaborate on that.
Why was I excited when I learned the church teaching?
Yes.
Because the church, when people get married, they recognize that they're accepting certain obligations, and those obligations are like any other agreement. So before I agreed to conceive children with my dear husband, I would only do so if he promised to uphold certain obligations towards me. And this stuff is just natural. It's in our core. If you were to do a survey and ask young people, how many of you want to have children, when you know that 2, 6, 12 years down the road, those children are going to be taken from you most of the time, and their upbringing is going to be controlled by a court system that has an ideology opposite of yours.
That's right.
And they might be exposed to all sorts of things that you think is not in their best interest. Would you like to conceive children under those circumstances? Most people would say, hell no. So with the church, when I agreed to marry my husband, there was an understanding that we were going to work together to maintain one household. And church teaching talks about how there are certain reasons to be separated. If I was a crazed drug addict, child abuser, child neglector, you know, if I was that person, then yes, my children have a right to be protected from me, the crazy, dangerous one.
That's right.
So the church says that under certain circumstances, you have an innocent party has a legitimate reason to be separated. And then the church even goes on to say that we need to have separations that are in accord with natural law, divine law, and no civil court judge who believes in all sorts of craziness is supposed to have competence to decide what goes on in separation of spouses. So to me, I thought that sounds pretty good compared to the experience in divorce where they basically hold your children or your property hostage and they coerce you and they say, if you don't agree to a divorce, ha ha ha, the lawyers are going to get more money because we're going to keep forcing you to come to these pretrial meetings and court proceedings. And every time an email goes back and forth, they charge you $100.
That's right.
And then they're going to take away your kids anyway, and they're going to take your property anyway. So there's no interest in no-fault divorce for the person who was causing the breakup or reneging on their promises to uphold those promises and repair damage. I mean, the analogy I use is, say we made no distinction between buying a car and getting a loan through a bank and leasing a car. So you go think you're buying your car. And then when you're done paying off the bank loan, the car dealer with the state and the court comes and takes away the car. And by the way, you have to keep paying you keep having to pay. People would throw a conniption fit. That's what they do with marriage.
Yeah, what a great deal. Well, you know, one of the things that you said, Bay McFarlane of Mary's Advocates is my special guest on the Skype Maker Hotline. Our telephone number, 844-527-8723. If you have a question, you can pop in the chat room at MikeChurch.com, and you can place your question in there because I am in the room and I am reading it right now. One of the things that you said about the teaching, and this is a part, Bay, that is just not part of most people's catechism today. They just don't, they're not told it, and they didn't research it for themselves, so they just don't know. That line in the vow, it's not a Hollywood inserted line, and it's not a joke, till death do us part. To have right. And to hold. The agreement is made under and before Almighty God himself, who says, okay, I concur. And in my concurrence, I'm going to give you two something that's very special and that no other creature that I ever created has. That's the ability to bring a new life form into this world, a new sentient being. And as an added bonus, I'm going to bless him with an eternal, holy soul. Now, because of original sin, it's going to be stained, but you can get rid of that with baptism. And then the rest is up to you and how you live your life. But the sacramental part of it, and this is where so many, myself included, I don't exclude myself because I'm in this situation as well. This is where so many people have not been properly catechized, and they just don't know that, look, when you do this, this is not something that you go into thinking that you stay in until the new car smell wears off. And then you go trade her in or you trade him in and get a new one. But that is the way children are being, unfortunately. And I think, Bay, we probably have, let's go back to the 1970s, you get 10, 20, 30, 40, 45, maybe 50 years of catechism on this. You have a monumental job or task in front of you, madam.
That's not my concern, how big the job is. The concern is, what is God allowing me to do that is within my control? When you talk about how people are uncatechized, yes and no, because what's involved in marriage is in our nature. So people, I would argue that people understand what permanence means. They understand what sexual fidelity means. They understand what openness to children means. And they can understand being oriented towards the good of the spouses. Those are the things that make marriage different than other relationships. So if people enter into marriage with that idea in mind, then they've got a valid marriage.
Sure, sure.
And then the question that Mary's Advocates focuses on exclusively is trying to reduce unilateral no-fault divorce. So I'm not trying to reduce all separations. I'm not trying to reduce all divorces. The only thing I'm trying to deal with is unilateral no-fault divorce, where the party who's the one who's reneging on the marriage promises, when the other one has done nothing of grave fault justifying separation, the outcome that occurs in those family situations is what Mary's Advocates is trying to reduce. So, you know, when people go into marriage, if they understand they want those four things, then they have what makes a marriage valid. Now, yeah, some people are so mentally disturbed that they actually can't understand that, and there are grounds for legitimate annulment. But I'm interested in what happens in the separations, which is where what Mary's Advocates does is not like what anyone else does, because we teach people who come to us, if you're about to be reluctantly divorced and both parties are Catholic, we show them how to use canon law to try to get the church to intervene. I think that some number of these women who are abandoning their husbands might change their mind if they're properly instructed or given the right kind of help. Or the Constitution, you know, if everybody's car dealers were taking the car away after you finish paying the bank loan, we'd have a constitutional problem there. If a state law says all the car dealers could take the car, the Constitution says states are not allowed to make laws infringing on the rights of parties in a contract. So marriage is a contract, just like a car lease or a car loan.
Great stuff. Bay McFarlane of Mary's Advocates is on the SkyMaker hotline here on the Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I want to read something to you. This is from your site. But I thought that the audience would find this interesting, and will give us another line of discussion. Ed Peters, this is from Mary's Advocates. It's marysadvocates.org, right?
Yes.
Okay. Ed Peters is a canon law professor for the Diocese of Detroit. He knows I publicize. Now, this is Mr. Rossi writing this piece, right?
That's me talking about a controversy that's happening last week.
Okay, but it doesn't have a byline, is why I thought that. Okay, got it. Okay, so it's you writing this. That makes it even better. Great. Ed Peters is the canon law professor for the Diocese of Detroit. He knows that I publicize that a Catholic in the United States is required by canon law to get the bishop's permission before filing for divorce. Peters criticized my position, so on May the 20th, I wrote Mary's Advocates' rebuttal to Ed Peters. Yesterday's article by Rossi criticized Peters. Quote, "The position of the renowned Roman canonist arguably promotes some of the favorite vices of the modern-day church, sloth, cowardice, and pride. Can anyone argue that it's easier for the churchmen if the sheep remain blind? Imagine the boat rocking you'd create by telling couples that their marriage is not their exclusive personal plaything. They might not like that. Even worse, they may not listen to you after you do inform them of the rules. And sheep who don't listen to the shepherd can hurt the pride of a shepherd who has become enamored of his own authority." Now, what did Mr. Peters, now after you published that, what was the response?
It started in May. Mary's Advocates had this controversial trifold brochure. And in my brochure, I said what I discovered, that you need the bishop's permission to petition for civil divorce as a Catholic in the United States. And I was showing readers how to go to Mary's Advocates and learn how to use canon law to ask the church to help prevent a breakup, or at least try to get justice in a breakup. So I published this brochure. And the controversial thing is that you need the bishop's permission before filing for divorce. And back in May, let me try to summarize. My own bishop would not give an imprimatur to my trifold flyer. And an imprimatur is the thing that allows any priest in the country to put a flyer in his book rack. You're not supposed to have flyers in book racks that don't have authentic church teaching. The bishop of the publisher or author is the one that has the competence to say, yeah, that's good or that's down.
Right, right.
So not having an imprimatur on my flyer would make it difficult for a priest who wanted to promote the canon law to do so. So anyhow, a couple years ago, Cardinal Coco Palermo from the Congregation of Canon Law at the Vatican It's Pontifical Council of Legislative Texas, the long name. Cardinal Coco Palermo had published a statement on their website saying, you don't need the bishop's permission. But the way he said it was so convoluted that it would take too long to explain. But all I can say is I've got dozens of resources on my website that say you do need the bishop's permission. Cardinal Coco Palermo says this thing that doesn't make any sense that says you don't need the bishop's permission. And his office at the Vatican has competence to teach correct interpretations. But just like Cardinal Casper can come out and say whatever he feels like, and the average reader doesn't know the difference between Cardinal Casper as teaching the authentic church teaching and Cardinal Casper as making up his own opinion, there's a way for Cardinal Coco Palermo's office to do something official. And the way he did this thing contradicting what we say was not the correct way. So there's this controversy from a year and a half ago with me and Cardinal Coco Palermo. So given that background, I've got my controversial flyer. My bishop says, no, you can't say that you need the bishop's permission to separate and file for divorce. That same time, Ed Peters had published something in the scholarly journal of Fellowship of Catholic Scholars where he's saying that Bay's wrong, but he doesn't name me. So this is the backdrop. This happened in May. So a week ago, this civil lawyer, Clay Rossi, who also has published the book on the Catholic Lawyer's Guide by Tan Publishers, he wrote an article in 1 Peter 5 showing that we really do need the church to do what canon law requires, which is to instruct whether or not someone has permission to separate before they file for divorce, because civil divorce is crazy and the church is good. So that was the background where Ed Peters came back. And the thing you were reading, the quote about how, can you read that again about the vices of the church?
The position of the quote, renowned Roman canonist, close quote, arguably promotes some of the favorite vices of the modern day church, sloth, cowardice, and pride. Can anyone argue that it's easier for the churchmen if the sheep remain blind? Imagine the boat rocking you'd create by telling couples that their marriage is not their exclusive personal plaything. They may not like that. Even worse, they may not listen to you after you do inform them of the rules. And sheep who don't listen to the shepherd can hurt the pride of a shepherd who has become enamored of his own authority.
So, civil lawyer Clay Rossi made that statement about the churchmen who have this sort of don't ask, don't tell policy about these canon laws that Mary's Advocates publicizes, where the civil lawyer is saying the church is being lazy, slothful, when it doesn't want people to know this. Because imagine what would happen if every time your Sunday Catholic wife wants to dump her husband for no good reason, what if she was told, excuse me, ma'am, if you're going to call yourself a good Catholic, you can't file for civil divorce until you have people who understand church teaching investigate your situation.
Sure, sure.
What would the feminists do? The feminazis, what would they do if women were told you can't dump your husband whenever you feel like it?
Well, they'd protest mightily and they'd get someone to write a bunch of laws. They wouldn't even have to get someone to write a bunch of laws. They would just out of civil disobedience, they'd perform acts of civil disobedience. That's what they'd do.
So here the civil lawyer is saying, you know, it's lazy for the church not to want people to know these canon laws. And then the cowardice, you know, who wants to be the one telling the church people that you're doing something wrong? When you're on the receiving end of that, it's really a disappointment. Because, you know, if I wanted to steal your car and I took your car and the police said, you know, we kind of don't want to tell Bay that it's wrong to steal your car, so just be peaceful. I mean, it's stupid. And then the other thing that Clay Rossi talked about from the church is the pride. I am stunned at the kind of reactions I'm getting out on social media about this controversy between me and Ed Peters. I mean, there's a canon lawyer telling me that I'm slandering and that I'm spiteful and that I'm, you know, it's like, and that she's not going to waste her time talking to me because I'm not a paying client. And all I'm doing is like, I'm just publicizing what I found about church teaching. And, you know, am I hurting her pride? Go figure.
Well, Bay McFarland of Mary's Helpers is on the Skype Maker hotline. It's a great subject here. We have lots of people commenting on this in the chat room at mikechurch.com, Bay. I actually had a I don't know who your canon lawyer, if there's a female canon lawyer that you're referring to, or if there's a female that works for a canon lawyer, because I actually had one pop up on my Facebook feed about, this is July. This is back in mid-May or so. And there was a story that I had published, and it wasn't directly related to this, but it was related to a similar circumstance where, I can't remember, it wasn't the cardinal that you cite, but it was another one that came out and said, well, you know, in a certain circumstance, if someone came into the confessional and said, you know, bless me, Father, I've sinned, you know, I'm kind of shacking up with this common law wife of mine. I was married in the church, et cetera. You know the setup here. And it is permissible for the priest to make a judgment call if the bishop told him that he could, and go like, all right, you can have all the sacraments. Hey, everybody come on in. And she was arguing that, well, this has been established now. And I wrote in there, and I went, I beg your pardon. Can you show me in the catechism? Can you show me a papal pronouncement on this, ex cathedra, where this has been established? Show it to me. And she goes, well, I work for a canon. Mr. Church, please, you're just a bumbling laity moron. You don't know anything. I said, I can read freaking Vatican documents, madam, and I know what they say. And she finally wound up unfriending me because about 30 people jumped in on this conversation. Here was the point, Bay. I don't understand why the church makes such a big deal about divorce. Everybody has, you know, divorce has to be a part of life. That's the heresy of modernity and Marcionism talking there. While it is a part of the life of Catholics and Christians since the wedding at Cana, it is not a normalized part of life. I heard Father Wolf give a sermon one time, Bay. Father Philip Wolf, he gave some statistics. And this is in 2012. He said that from the time of the Council of Nicaea or something, or maybe the Council of Ephesus, from the time of the Council of Ephesus to 2012, the Roman Catholic Church had granted somewhere on the order of 2,000 and change decrees of nullity. I mean, the number was infinitesimal. In 1 year, the Archdiocese of Los Angeles had granted 12,000. That's where we are.
Well, on Mary's Advocate's website, if anybody wants to see how many annulments are granted in their diocese, we have a section under our research for Catholic annulment, and there's a table of contents. And at the bottom, you can just click and see the statistics from different dioceses. All the dioceses are required to give a report to Rome. The Canon Law Society of America collects as many as they can, and they publicize it in a chart. So you can just look up and see. I'm in the Cleveland Diocese, and they gave more annulments per population than anyone else other than Los Angeles, but that was like 5 years ago. I think Los Angeles has had a personnel change. So yeah, they are giving a lot of annulments. And like I said, I don't have a problem with legitimate annulments.
Sure.
My problem is unilateral no-fault divorce. So let's walk through here and say, if we were implementing canon law, what would that look like? So say I'm engaged to you, mm-hmm. and you have a twin brother, and the day we go down the aisle, you have your twin brother stand in your stead. So I exchanged marriage promises with this person who I thought was you. Okay, I didn't actually marry him because that's a legitimate reason for annulment, that you marry the person you didn't think you were marrying. So then we get an annulment. But mistake of person, that kind of fraud, is both a ground in civil court and canon law court for
sure,
an annulment.
Sure, sure,
so
sure.
So let's do both. Or say somebody is committing, they never ever intended permanence. If you signed a car lease and the car dealer from the very beginning had this practice where they take the cars away from you 2 years later and they want you to keep paying, if they from the very beginning intended to defraud you, well, that's a ground for civil. It's a void contract. You're not obligated to uphold your end of the contract when they intended from the beginning to violate the promises. Marriage could be the same way. So what I'm interested in is having separations in the civil forum that are more just and fair. So if a man is fooling around with his fiancée, I mean, he's cheating on his fiancée, he's cheating on his wife, he's impregnating women outside of marriage, this guy from the beginning is bad news. Okay, if that's what he was, then the woman has a grounds for a civil annulment and a church annulment. And in civil law, if you defraud somebody, you could be expected to repair damages and repair good and make good on the damage you caused the person.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. This is the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. We are live on our website at crusadechannel.com. You can listen on our apps, which are free to download in the Google Play Store and iTunes Store. And we are conversing with Bay McFarlane of Mary's Advocates, who is an advocate to bring an end to this pariah, this scourge. This epidemic of no-fault divorces, where one party actually is at fault and the other party is left either holding the bag or paying for the bag. We used to hear this a lot, Bay. Two things. I want to go back to my point here and just make a clarification. So when I cite the amount of annulments that are given, that are granted, as opposed to how many were granted prior to the modern age, I don't cite it to say that the annulments that are granted are illegitimate, because if they are, then that's on the tribunal and the bishop that granted them. It's not on the people that received them. That's one. Second thing is, this, though, is a part of our lack of fidelity and reverence towards the tradition of the church and the tradition of marriage and the tradition of upholding 2,000 years of moral teaching, because you wouldn't be entering into these marriages. Would you have scandals? Of course you would. We're humans. We're fallen. Would you have them in the percentages that we have them today? Well, we have a pretty good historical record that says no, you would not. So I'm more referring to the fact that the precedents that are that we are seeing today are not just happening in a vacuum. They are happening as a result of a lack of catechism. And there's a lack of devotion to that to that tradition and that moral theology that, as Catholics, we should all know. I should even go out on a limb and say pre-Lambeth Council, 1931, all the Protestant denominations knew as well. This was something that was universal, was ubiquitous. As a matter of fact, if Martin Luther were sitting right here, right now, looking at you, he would go like, I can't argue, she's got a point. So there wouldn't be any argument in the Christian world prior to the very modern age. Again, this madness began officially with the Lambeth Council in 1931. Yes, I know that they dealt principally with contraception. But that's when that cat got out of the bag, so to speak, the writing was on the handwriting was on the wall. So having said all that, I find it fascinating that you say correctly that you have to get a bishop's permission to pursue a divorce. I can tell you, personally, I went to two priests in 2000 and 2001 before my divorce from my Catholic marriage. And I do not recall, maybe he did and didn't tell me, I do not recall ever seeking the permission of either of the bishop in either the Diocese of Charlotte, North Carolina, or the Diocese of New Orleans for permission to divorce. As a matter of fact, I recall one of the priests actually saying that, well, you know, it happens. It's no big deal. We're just going to go file the paperwork and be done with it. And after that's done, then we could talk about article or a decree of nullity. It was just presented to us as, well, just another walk in the park, just another day. It's just another day in the church, that's all. And upon reflecting 16 years later, I go like, man, that was really jacked up. They should have been going, no, you need to stop what you're doing, and you need to get your act together and get back to that house, that wife, and those kids, is what should have been told to me. It wasn't. And that's the fact, Jack.
Okay. It's a mess. So you said a lot there.
That's what I do, Bay. I say a lot.
I know. That's good. Regarding the numbers or percentages of annulments, mm-hmm. prior to the 1983 Code of Canon Law, the United States had permission to kind of put things on a fast track only in the United States for about 12 years. Cardinal Raymond Burke says that during that time, we got annulments to be called Catholic divorce because they were granted so often. And he said that at the highest tribunals in Rome, they were finding that these annulments were being done with shoddy practices. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Both Pope Benedict and Pope St. John Paul II have criticized English-speaking tribunals for abuses of certain grounds for annulment. And the ones that are abused are the psychological grounds for annulment. If someone is so mentally impaired at the time they consent to marriage that they actually don't know what they're doing, they're not capable of making a decision, that is not a valid marriage. You can't marry a six-year-old. You can't marry an extreme schizophrenic when they're drunk and on drugs. So, okay. But what these two popes were criticizing was the abuses of these. And there was a guy who had an article in St. Ignatius Press, the one for priests, Homiletic and Pastoral Review. There was a guy who wrote an article in there where he studied the annulments granted in Rome that were doing appeals, reviews. 95% of the annulments granted in the United States during the five-year period of his study, when the U.S. granted an annulment for these psychological grounds, Rome overturned it and said no. So that's enough for me to know there are abuses going on with these psychological grounds for annulment. But now going back to your priest, if the priests are never educated about needing the bishop's permission.
Sure.
Anyone knows that after Vatican II and in the 60s, the sexual revolution was occurring inside the church as much as it was everywhere else. So I can't slight a priest for not knowing what the priest does not know. What's curious is now when I'm publishing on my website what the church teaching is, I have canon lawyers attacking me personally, saying that they have no business to even talk to me because I don't have a canon law degree, and I just throw up my hands and say, whatever. If the priest had told you that you need the bishop's permission, then what would be happening is there would be some kind of investigation. There would be a determination, is there a legitimate reason for separation of spouses here, or is somebody just really angry, really hurt, and holding on to a grudge? And anyone who's had any friends or any family in their entire life knows we all do that to one level or another.
Sure.
But absolutely, it's not a ground for permanent separation of spouses. So if the church did dedicate the resources to implementing these canon laws, and we show people how to ask that they be implemented, we could have investigations at the time of separation. And then the other really cool thing is the church is the one who has to judge on what kind of separation is in accord with divine law. So if you had a woman who's just bought the feminazi thing, lock, stock, and barrel, her husband gained weight, he's not as handsome, whatever, and she's really excited about her career, and she's kind of annoyed, she wants to dump her husband. Okay, the more she emotionally detaches, the more she can't stand being near him, she's not emotionally interested, he's repulsive. Nonetheless, you know these women, they exist. So, but if she's a serious Catholic and the church investigates and the church gives a decree that says, okay, ma'am, you don't have any legitimate reason for separation, if you move forward with your civil divorce, you are by definition a malicious abandoner, what will happen? If she cares at all about her faith, it might shake her up. Anyone watching will know, oh, the church is actually against marital abandonment, because right now the church doesn't know that. And then, furthermore, if she's told that, and then if she comes forward and says, you know what, I want an annulment. Okay, ma'am, on what grounds? If the grounds for the annulment is that she should get a psychological annulment based on incapacity to consent, well, what does that mean? She was so screwed up mentally at the time of her marriage that she could not conceptualize what marriage is. Openness to children, permanence, fidelity, orientation towards the good of the spouses. If she was so mentally screwed up that she can't understand that, in most states, we have state civil annulment based on mental problems. So what happens with the property split? What happens with support? If a man was never married to a woman who tricked him into supporting her for 14 years, does he have to pay her support for a long time? Does he have to give her any property? No. So what I'm saying is, did you follow how that plays out?
Yes.
So
I have a question from Brother Andre Marie. Brother asked me, Mike, please ask Mrs. McFarlane this. If someone, and you pretty much just answered it, I think, brother, but I'll ask anyways. If someone's marriage is annulled based on psychological grounds, can that person marry again in the Catholic Church, or will he, she be informed that the psychological illness precludes it? And I think you kind of just touched on that, but...
If it was psychological illness 14 years ago, when I was a nutcase, that is the grounds for annulment, then I'm saying the property split and the support issues and the control of children should be based on me being incapable to think straight. If I was that mentally screwed up 14 years ago, what an annulment tribunal can do is issue something on me. I want to say it's called a vadatum, but I could be pronouncing it incorrectly. It's saying to me, Bay, you have serious mental problems. You can't think straight. You're not allowed to enter marriage until you get permission from your bishop. So what happens is these people who get these vadatums, they go see a psychologist. The psychologist has them take some $180 standardized test. They score within the norm. Then they go, hey, bishop, I'm normal. And then they're free to marry anyway. So it's a slap on the wrist that I think doesn't really make any difference. What I'd really love to see is have them have separation plans based on me being a nutcase when I got married, because then maybe the truth would surface. Because my goal, like you say, Veritas Radio, our goal is the truth. So yes. If someone really was mentally disturbed at the time of marriage, we need to be looking at that at the time of separation and divorce, so we have a separation that is a just outcome in contrast to unilateral no-fault divorce outcomes.
Well, you know, and I'll just chime in here, and I am not a catechism teacher, I'm not a canon lawyer or anything, but I am a reader, and I do try and stay up on these things, and I've read a lot about this. When our Lord tells the apostles, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever sins you shall have loosed on earth will be loosed in heaven. If adultery is a sin, and it is, and if entering into a contract under fraudulent circumstances is a sin, and it is, well, then we already have the answer of what we ought to do. And the church ought to just be on that line, counseling that as best to their best course. You know, priests aren't mind readers. They can't possibly know all these things. But if you know this going in, that, for example, there are stories of priests that have granted, that have heard, I think there's a book written about this, Bay, and have heard acts of confession, and might have even thought, this guy doesn't really mean it, but I'm going to go ahead and give him absolution anyways. And learned, were shown visions that, dude, you just absolve that person? That's on you now. Now you have to go and get rid of that sin because you shouldn't have, and you knew you shouldn't have. So there's a lot of corruption in going on here that makes up all this. It's very fascinating. And as I was taught in my broadcasting Talk Radio 101, which doesn't really exist, I did have good consultants who were teachers early in my career. We should never resolve the conflict. So the listeners will come back for the next round of this. So I'd like to keep this conversation going.
So when is next time?
When is next time? Next time Ed Peters rebuts to you, we'll make it next time. Or anytime. I tell you what. We can do this as a regular because people have a lot of questions about this. And I think now that you've been on, Bay, and if you and I promote this together, because live radio provides us the forum that podcasting and the rest of that stuff does not. People can call in, they can send me a question, they can email you, they can email me while we can answer the questions. You know what else I'd like to do? I'd like to invite my friend, Father David Nix, to come and sit in on this because he's very, very informed about all this, and have him here when we're having this conversation, because I think that, look, between me and you and the audience out there, I think this is the big one. This is the one that holds the keys to the future. Solid families that stay together sacramentally and produce children through their mutual love for one another in cooperation with God and stay together to raise those children. That's the faith. That's the future. That's what you're supposed to do. And to get that wrong, I mean, that's where society, that's where civilization's gone wrong today. We get that wrong. So I think this is the biggest conversation. One of the biggest that we can have. So I'm open to continuing, but I have Mittish Youngblood knocking on my door going, hey, dude, hey, Lama, it's time for the news.
Okay. Can I say a few things?
Please do.
Before the news. I would love to continue. My challenge is I never know week to week whether I have to look for another job. I literally survive on donations as they come in. So when I'm asked to do something 3 weeks from now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it or not, because I don't know if I'm going to be having to look for another job. So that's one piece. If people like what I'm proposing, we need to keep it funded so I can keep pounding the doors out there and getting the word out. And for anyone who's listening, the resources we have, anyone who's facing an unwanted divorce where the other party is a Catholic, we can show them how to use canon law to ask for help. Anyone who's facing a trumped up annulment charge, we can show them how to use canon law to defend their marriage. And anyone who's getting married, we can show them how to put in writing their intention to follow the church teaching.
So they
make it a solid contract.
Okay, so they go to www.marriesadvocates.org, correct?
Correct.
It'll be up. We'll have a highlight reel from our conversation. We'll have a link directly to you. Speaking of Celeste in the news, I think she's going to want to speak to you after the fact or take an excerpt from this to make Veritas Radio Network News Bureau is going to want to make a story out of this. I think that you will get some outreach and some support from the audience, Bay.
All right. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Thank you.